Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Remember, the quiet ones always have the darkest secrets. It's time to uncover them on Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
Lori Vallow Daybell, previously convicted of the murders of her two children and her husband's former wife, now facing additional charges in Arizona. She is accused of conspiring to kill her fourth husband, Charles Vallow, and attempting to murder her fiance's ex-husband, Brandon Boudreaux. You know, like you do in a normal family. In a recent court appearance, Lori Vallow chose to represent herself, raising the concerns about her understanding of the legal procedures and the seriousness of the charges, which, yeah, I think we all have a lot of questions about just how present Lori actually was in court the other day while representing herself. Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, former prosecutor and defense attorney. Eric, after watching the beginning circus prelude to what is about to happen here in the new trial of Lori Vallow, what do you think is we're dealing with? What are we walking into?
Oh, dear. In looking at the progression of this case, and specifically how Lori Vallow Daybell has conducted herself during the case, initially in the case alleging she killed her two kids, which she was convicted of, she was found incompetent. That means that she did not understand the proceedings around her and or didn't understand the charges and or could not materially aid in the assistance of her defense. So how do you go from being a complete legal invalid to being at the helm of your own defense in a murder case, acting as an attorney? That is a monumental leap, and a lot of questions remain.
Just watching her the other day, I mean, it was an utter train wreck. She didn't seem to understand anything that was going on. I mean, she wasn't bringing up any aspects of her cases. She was talking about when she was moved and extradited to Arizona, how it didn't make any sense to her, and she needed more information on that. And the judge very calmly saying to her, you did get the grand jury transcripts that explains the charges against you. And she seems to think that that doesn't exist, or that the information in there somehow doesn't pertain to her case. That, to me, just right there said she doesn't fully grasp what is going on, but this just seems to be plowing forward no matter what. I mean, at some point, could we see the judge or the court saying, okay, we can't do this? Not necessarily that she's not competent to stand trial, but she's not competent to represent herself.
You know, it's a difficult legal balancing act, because on the one hand, Lori Vallow Daybell has the right to represent herself if she's doing so in a knowing, incompetent fashion. On the other hand, she has to be legally competent to stand trial. And when you have a defense attorney, it's usually the defense attorney who raises the competency issue and says, hey, there's something wrong with my client. I'm worried they don't know what's going on. Lori Vallow Daybell doesn't have such an advocate who would be in a position to know that and present it to the court. So we have to rely on the judge and even possibly the prosecutor, who's her adversary, to say, hey, I don't think she is in a right mental state to do this. They are less well positioned to do that. And so could we just be spiraling towards this train wreck of a trial? I think so.
Can you be both? Can you be competent to stand trial and competent to represent yourself? Are the two basically the same thing? If you're competent to stand trial, then you are competent enough to represent yourself. You're not going to know the legal maneuvers and what you need to do and procedure, and that's going to take a lot of learning and a lot of direction by the court and probably some patience. But are the two hand in hand?
I would say that there is substantial overlap. If a person is competent to stand trial, that means they know what's going on in the legal proceedings in a basic sense. They know what the charges are, and they can materially aid in their own defense. That's pretty much what you need in order to represent yourself at trial. And so I think the finding of competency lends itself to allowing her to represent herself at this trial. Now, that's a horrible idea, but is it legally impermissible? I don't think so.
She does have some legal aid next to her that seems to be kind of helping things along. It's not an attorney that's speaking on her behalf. What kind of restrictions are put on individuals like that do have legal expertise and are there as an aid, but not necessarily actual, counsel that's representing you in court?
Yeah, Tony, in Colorado, where I practice, we call that advisory counsel. They call it different things across the United States, but it is one of the worst positions to be in as an attorney because you don't have any power. You can't tell the court to do something on your client's behalf. Your client has to. You can really just kind of whisper in your client's ear like, hey, you shouldn't do that, or hey, try to say this or whatever. And it's so frustrating, especially if your client is sort of bullheaded and stubborn and maybe not possessing all the mental faculties one would hope in that position. It's a horrible state for the advisory council to be in.
What sort of help do they give outside of the courtroom? Is it just like, okay, we're in the ring and now they're there, or outside of the courtroom? Do they sit down? Do they talk about, okay, kind of here's how it's going to go. Here's how you can say this. Here's how you're supposed to say this. Do they give any sort of insight or advice to the client? Ultimately, Lori's choice is Lori's choice if she wants to do, but how much can they intervene on something like this?
They can intervene to a degree so long as the client allows them, but that's not always the case. So what happens is they should request meetings outside of the court dates to talk about exactly what you said, to talk about the case, talk about the case file, talk about its contents, talk about certain evidence that might be presented, how to combat that evidence. But if you're dealing with someone who's in la-la land and or who thinks they're fully capable of handling this on their own, it might go in one ear and out the other.
That's kind of what it feels like everything does with Lori. Anytime it comes to issues that she caused or had a major hand in or planned, like the murder of her children, it seems to go in one ear and out the other, and the facts do not matter. It all goes back to whatever narrative she wants to explain, just as she did to her son Colby not long ago when he did an interview on his YouTube channel with his mother, and she was aware. He did say, I am recording you. This is an interview. I'm going to put it out there. So she wasn't thinking this was a private conversation. At least it was revealed to her that that's exactly what it is before she spoke aloud. And she still spoke aloud. And she told him that it wasn't her that committed murder. It was Tylee. Tylee went and killed JJ accidentally. And then out of guilt, she killed herself, and then Lori walked in and saw the horrible crime scene, and then Chad and Alex or whoever went and took care of it, and she didn't have to worry about it again. And by the way, Tylee wanted to be cremated anyhow, so that's why she's in a bucket melted in the backyard. That's literally what happened. I'm not trying to be crude. It is what it is. So to have that out there in the ether now, could that not be brought into this trial of, look, you have this, you're claiming this, especially if she tries to claim something else in court that differs from what she said to her own son.
It absolutely could come out. The most likely way that it would is if Lori Vallow-Daybell testifies, which, she's not really going to have an attorney at the helm telling her not to. She'll have advisory counsel telling her not to, but that's not the same thing. And so if she gets up there and testifies, prior inconsistent statements or statements that have a negative impact on a person's credibility can be brought out to the jury. So they could ask her, hey, how did your two kids die? And she'll save this fantastical story. And then the prosecution might be able to say, no, a jury found that convicted you of killing those two kids, right? And it calls into question her credibility. All of that fantastical nonsense could come into the trial in a way that could be even more damning for Lori Vallow-Daybell than it looks presently.
Walk me through this. How does she testify? I understand how she would testify on cross, but without your own attorney there to kind of throw you the softballs and work through it, how would that work in this case?
It's a weird thing, and it varies by jurisdiction. Some jurisdictions I've heard even require a pro se defendant to ask themselves a question and then answer the question to themselves.
Oh, that would be fun.
have lead meth in this case. Usually what they'll do is they'll allow the defendant some latitude to testify in a narrative fashion to kind of just go on. But there are some parameters and objections can be made. But Lori Valdeva will probably get up there and just kind of say her piece. And the prosecutor is probably going to be smart and just let her go and show the jury how crazy she is and without objecting.
Would it be similar to what we saw in the Robert Tellis case earlier last year? This was the man who allegedly killed the Las Vegas reporter. Big egomaniac goes up, and he had a narrative way of testifying. I don't even think he was his own attorney as well. And so it was a kind of a narrative testimony. We don't see that very often, though. And how do you keep him on track? Or is that just up to the judge at that point?
You know, you're exactly right. That's what happened in the Robert Tellis case. And look how that narrative testimony worked out for him. He was convicted swiftly. You know, the judge kind of has a role to say, hey, we're getting so far afield of anything relevant in this case that you got to rein it in. Sometimes they will, what's called sua sponte, object on their own, which means just on their own accord, the judge, even if the prosecutor doesn't object. So, you know, there are going to be some sort of, you know, railings in place to try to keep her focused. But if I was a prosecutor, man, I would just let her go and then just like look at the jury and be like, you see what I mean?
That's what I'm wondering. It's like, is she going to do her own thing and do her own narrative testimony? And then it comes to cross and they're like, any questions? We're good. I rest my case. I don't know that they're going to need to do a whole lot. Do you think we're going to see, you know, is it going to take a lot to bring her down? This is going to be a very different trial than her last one. Obviously, in her last one, they didn't really argue much at all, but Lori this time thinks that, you know, she can. Do you think we're going to see a lot of things coming from the state, or are they just going to kind of let her sink her ship?
You know, I think these cases that are about to be going to trial against Lori Valdeva are less strong than the cases of her killing her children. I think there is less evidence. There's certainly less direct evidence. Now, there are incriminating statements and there is a financial motivation. There is evidence. But it's not a slam dunk unless Lori takes the ball and dunks it in her own basket, which she very well may do operating as her own counsel.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. Like, if she had an attorney, there might actually be a chance on some of these. But with her taking the helm, yeah, the ship's pretty much guaranteed to sink, I think.
Hey, thanks for checking out the video. Be sure to follow us wherever you download podcasts, and especially Apple Podcasts, where you can get advanced episode and premium content on our premium channel right there. Also, be sure to follow us on social media so you don't miss any breaking updates on the stories that matter to you most. We're on TikTok, X, Instagram, Facebook. Just search Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi, and you'll find us right there. Again, thanks for watching. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk. Ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.